Welcome to The Convo. I am your host, Lakeisha Mosley. I'm a mom, a blogger, a brand influencer, and the event producer of my own event management company called The LM Experience. On The Convo, you'll hear conversations with some of the most profound entrepreneurs from all over the world as they share with us their wins and their losses. They'll also share tips and tricks with you that will help you be successful along this journey called entrepreneurship. Let's get started with the show. Good evening, Ms. Deborah. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic.
That is good to hear. I'm so excited to have you on Convo with Keisha today. Thank you so much for joining me.
It's a pleasure being with here.
Thank you.
Thank you for hosting me. It's definitely an honor to share the same space with you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much. So start by telling the guests a little bit about yourself.
Okay. My name is Debbie Price, as mentioned earlier. I came to meet you because of this program, the first ever HBCU Queens Anthology. Yes. And I guess amongst the queens that were featured in this particular program, I was the most seasoned, should you say, queen. But even though being seasoned, I was really honored with that because my particular reign was between 1977-78. Mm-hmm. However, you know, when I spoke about my particular reign, I not only covered 77, 78, but I started at the beginning, which was in 1974. Mm-hmm. So what was really unique about this particular time was the civil rights movement.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So it was very strong. And again, it would be remiss for me not to mention John Lewis at the time, because he wasn't only an icon, but he was a friend.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Certainly condolences to you. I met him briefly here in Houston. He came for a Dr. Martin Luther King breakfast, and he spoke friendly, open.
Humble.
He was just so personable. He's like a very, very nice man. Everybody was trying to flock to him. So I got a few minutes with him, but it was worth it. That was definitely worth it. So definitely, an honor to him for all that he did for us and endured for us. And in all honesty, didn't stop fighting until his last breath.
Just speechless. But, you know, especially during that time, you know, the 60s and the 70s, being at A&T, which was the university that I represented, North Carolina A&T State University, in Greensboro, North Carolina, civil rights was strong. It was powerful, you know, and just getting to A&T, when I think back, over 50 years, you know, my feelings about attending an HBCU, let alone North Carolina A&T, has been such an honor and continues to be to this day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because folks just don't understand the roles that HBCUs have played. The one thing that I do is I speak on it, you know, because folks need to understand that, you know, when I talk about HBCUY, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? And basically, it's for those doors that were closed, you know, to minorities from other institutions. You know, HBCUs opened those doors and allowed us to have that access to that education that others didn't have. And not only did we have access, but it also provided a supportive environment. So we succeed, you know. So you got me talking about HBCUs, which is a it's You know, it's just a legacy. It's just a legacy that we must hold on to and not forget. You right. know, and that's a lot of what the civil rights movement was. It's about knowing who you were, who we were, what we stood for, what the voices stood for, mm-hmm. you know, and why these institutions gave birth.
Right.
You know? So it was good.
That's true. I actually, this year on my blog, the entire month of February, I blogged about Black history, and HBCUs were one of the topics for one of my blog posts, and it was just interesting. I didn't attend an HBCU. I started at Southern University, and then I got pregnant, and I came home, and after my daughter was like, few months old, I was like, well, I want to go back to school. My mom was like, well, you're not taking that baby with you back out. So I wound up going to another university, but it was so interesting to learn how they got started and how important, you know, they are to our culture and to us knowing who we are and how we should move about now, you know, as it relates to education and where, you know, we decide, where our kids, you know, if we have any influence in that, you know, where we send them. So I was really like so just all into it when I was doing the research.
Right.
HBCUs, and I listed, you know, several of the schools that were the first and how they started. So definitely we'll get into, you know, the HBCU why for you. But I want to start with, how did you end up at North Carolina A&T State University?
You know, that's a really interesting question, because as I grew up, I grew up in a military family.
Mm-hmm.
We traveled the world, and during my high school years, we had been in the military. You're growing up in a multicultural environment,
mm-hmm.
you know. And one of my girlfriends graduated a year before me, and she attended A&T. And she contacted me, and she said, "Deb, you got to come. You got to come." You know. And I said, Of course, I wasn't looking at an HBCU at the time.
Right.
But you know what? It was the best decision that I made.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because it helped me grow into, as well as get to know the me.
Right.
Me as a person, you know, and I hadn't spent a lot of time in the South at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, but I was exposed to things that I had never seen before, you know, especially coming from overseas and from the West Coast and mm-hmm. from the North. I hadn't seen these signs like "for coloreds only," you know, those types of things that you hear, or the slanted conversations, you know. And
right.
I was like, okay, all right. But I kid you not, as soon as I stepped on the grounds at A&T, it was a sense of pride,
mm-hmm.
a sense of pride. And it was the best decision I've ever made,
mm-hmm.
ever made.
That's so
ever made.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's so awesome to hear. Like, I attended one of my friend's homecoming at Prairie View. And it was my first HBCU experience in mm-hmm. that amount. I was at Southern for about a year and a half before I got pregnant and came home. But at that time, Southern was undergoing renovations. So mm-hmm. we didn't have like our student union or anything like that. But I don't ever recall like having the experience like I had when I went to his homecoming, and it was just so you know, like, amazing. So I just love how you know, you talk about it and the passion that comes with it. So like, share a little bit about your four-year experience and like the activities while you were there.
Most definitely. When I have to, and this is part of the book. This is part of the book, and I have to share this with you. When I first started at A&T, you know, being a typical freshman, you party, you socialize, you try to figure out, you know, your class schedule, you go through all of these kinds of things. And in my particular freshman year, and I speak about this in the book because my story is very raw. I'm very open with it. It was very difficult to write. I'll be the first one to say that, you know, but I found myself going down this path that put me in academic trouble my freshman year, you know, and yeah, my GPA was 1.98. But when I got that GPA, I not only let myself down, but my, you know, people that believed in me, but even to this day, I still remember the look on my mother's face, you know, and that was one look that I will never forget, even though she's not with us anymore, but she didn't say anything, but it was her look because she knew that I could do much better than what I was doing. And she would constantly plant seeds in my mind, you know, like just do the best that you can do and just be. Just trust in your walk, you know, and those seeds of advice was the foundation of me turning around, you know? And I think that experience with my freshman year, it told me that your beginnings don't always dictate what your ending is going to be. It's about what are you going to do once you've been placed in this position? So bottom line, it comes down to decisions, you know, you're always going to come into crossroads with people, you know, with suggestions and ideas. And I was blessed with being given a second opportunity, you know, and with that, you know, my engagement with, I became a cheerleader my freshman year. You know, for the 4 years, I was a cheerleader. So representing A&T was just something that came naturally. You know, cheerleaders through the blue and gold marching machine, you know, when the band struck up, you know, we were out there, the front lines were out there, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was working in the cafeteria, you know, my freshman year. So, you know, giving more than food, we were feeding spirit and talks and, you know, it's nothing like the exchange of food because food is in many ways. It could be, you know, just words of recommendation. It could be healing. It could be an ear, having a discerning ear for people going through all of that, all of that. And then naturally having to bounce back and get my grades in order. You know, you're saying the 4 years, I'm looking at the cheerleading experience, the football, the basketball, you know, the excitement that my sophomore year, I was Miss Sophomore, you know, I was humbled that they picked me to be Miss Sophomore, you know, and still trying to get those grades going, you know, but I was able to get the grades back on track, but that was through the love of the university and the professors and the teachers and the, my classmates, we were like, okay, we got to get on track and make a difference, you know, because you can go to a school and party yourself out, you know, party yourself out, but if you're around the right people and the right organizations, which I was blessed to be around, you know, they took me in directions that I never thought that I would take, you know, in my junior year, I was Miss Omega Psi Phi, you know, purple and gold, the brothers of Mu Psi, you know, one of the best experiences ever, you know, and even to this day, our friendships are so special. So special, you know, but, you know, Keisha, I don't have to tell you this, you know, people, they plant seeds in your life while you're on your journey.
Yes, ma'am.
And sometimes you don't even understand what the seeds mean you know, what they are until it's time for them to be birthed.
Yes.
You know, and when I found out my junior year that that my classmates, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I told you, it's like almost 50 years later, and my emotions have not wavered at all, you know, because I have a tendency of thinking what they placed on me because they believed in me.
Yes.
You know, and the belief was not only representing them and being the voice and the face of the university, representing not just the students that were on the campus, mm-hmm. but entrusting.
Yes.
Me to be the voice of those Aggies that are no longer standing.
Yeah.
You know, and to be honored and blessed with that is something that I don't take lightly. Mm-hmm. Because even in today, even with today, you know, I look at how many people, we were talking COVID earlier, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm looking at how many people have transitioned.
Yes.
And I'm looking at the messages that were left on the walls, like anti has stopped wall, you know, with the bullets. You know, we have our students that were beaten at the Woolworth counters. You know, we have our students that shed blood on the sidewalks. I have the pride in marching in the marching bands, you know, the pointing of the toes, the split with the cheerleaders, you know, we took pride in that blue and gold, you know, and to be in a position to articulate what that pride meant and what it stood for, you know, for them to give me the honor to carry that and to be their voice. I'm still passionate to this day. You know, and yeah, it's almost 50 years later, you know, but I look at the newer queens, the younger, my babies, I call them my babies, you know, and they're doing a great job, you know, and the movement, like the Black Lives Movement, you know, yeah. I look at how that parallels to what we were doing along our day.
Yes.
So, it's just as strong and just as powerful.
Yes.
The message is there, and we as the seasoned bodies or the alumni, you know, we're always going to be there to be those advisors,
right,
for those that can give direction. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I look at you, look at what you're doing. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
Because what you're doing is challenging for a lot of those that can't articulate.
Yeah,
you know, you're doing it beautifully, so I thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Deborah, for just the passion and sharing that and being vulnerable to us. There are no apologies, not on my show, for any of that, because I just feel blessed to be connected to someone who was during that time, and now I see us going through that again, and dealing with a lot of that. I shared on my Facebook page a couple of weeks ago, I started a new brand, a social activist brand called mm-hmm. Racial Disruptors. And my job is to expose those people who are not behaving well. Police, politicians, it doesn't matter who they are. So I have to be a voice for those people who don't have a platform, who feel like they don't have a voice to share what they need to share. And I share very passionately. And I think I was a little choked up. And I said, I don't care who doesn't like it. I'm going to speak for those who can no longer speak. I'm tired of hashtagging my brothers and sisters' names. It doesn't make any sense for us to do that. And for people who feel like, oh, it's powerless, we can't do anything, I want a platform where they can come on there and they can tell me, Lakeisha, I don't like this. And this is what happened to me, and this is what's going on. So thank you for sharing, paving the way for us. Because we had to have an example somewhere. And yeah. for you all to endure or persevere. I'm not going to say endure. I'm going to say persevere through it because you made it through, you know, to share your story. If no one else tells you, I appreciate you for just doing that for us. Because that's what I look back on when I go to do research on what do I need to do differently in this new brand. I look at what someone has done before me. Because that's what we need now.
Yeah.
And that's what we need.
And the important thing is to learn from our experiences and grow and understand how to strategize your moves going forward.
Exactly. You know?
Everybody isn't bad. Everybody right. isn't bad. You know, it's just learning how to convey the message in a way that everybody understands. So collectively, you can move forward and everybody will prosper.
Exactly.
Everybody will prosper, you know, exactly. So,
That's so important. That's so important. And I could just hear the pride as you talk about, you know, being at North Carolina A&T and being an Aggie. So tell me, what is so special about being an Aggie?
The legacy.
Yes.
The legacy, you know, when I think about A&T, you know, it's about excellence.
Yes, ma'am.
It's about excellence. It's about this level of pride where, you know, you'll see it in the band. When the band comes, you see it mm-hmm. in that. And the cheerleaders, because we talk big, bold junk.
Yeah.
But, and doing it, we bring it also, you know. So on the fields, on the with the athletic arenas, in the classrooms, mm-hmm. you know, we have some of the best professors and the instructors. They are hard on you. You might not understand it at the time.
Right.
But when you finish at graduation, it's like this level of, yes, you crossed.
That's right.
You crossed because you were here for a reason. We think, you know, I often talk about the parents, you know, the parents that sacrificed, that allowed us to get on the campus because mm-hmm. they couldn't get there, but they believed in us.
Yes.
So we had to bring it home. You know yes. what I'm saying? And in bringing it home, that means academically, athletically, the research that's mm-hmm. out there that's impacting so many. You know, even we had astronauts that have successfully made it. In the,
yes.
You know, Ron McNair, I'm still proud with Ron McNair and Jesse mm-hmm. Jackson right next to me, hand in hand in 78. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't take that lightly.
Exactly.
Our first, Michelle Burney. You know, mm-hmm. she was the first Miss HBCU to be on the face of the Ebony magazine. Mm-hmm. You know, that was my Miss First, Miss A&T. Mm-hmm. You know, but the legacy of an Aggie is so deeply rooted, you know. And again, those bullets in that wall, those kids getting beat. In the Woolworth counter, we stood hand by hand and backed them and supported them.
Yeah.
We can't forget where we've come from.
Exactly.
A history that's on the field that people don't even know about. You know, the Black Barracks for Coloreds Only. That was on the base, on the football field. People don't know about that. The history mm-hmm. is there. I can't.
Yeah.
The pride shots, Matt. Fast forward. Come on.
Exactly.
President Obama. Michelle Obama, everybody
yes.
gracing our campus because they understand the value of the soil that's in Greensboro,
right.
North Carolina.
That's
Come
right.
on now.
That's
come
right.
On now.
That's enough to be
now.
Proud. Yes.
Oh, come
that
on.
That is
now.
Enough to be proud.
Come on now. the blue and the gold, you know, come on. When the Aggies come home, they come home. They come home. And that's why the theme for my coronation was coming home with a touch of class. Because mm-hmm. not only did they come home from the students, the homecoming, but it's from everybody that graduated. Just come on home. Just come mm-hmm. on home. You know? Just,
yeah.
Girl, you got me. Woo! How do you define something that's so difficult to define?
Yeah.
Like a precious yeah. jewel.
Exactly.
It's like a diamond in the rough. You don't see right. it until you've rubbed it and you've touched it.
You've experienced it. Yes.
You'll
yes.
see the value of the carrot.
Exactly. Sure. Exactly. Yeah. That's
Aggie pride.
Yes, ma'am. I love that. Oh, I love it, love it, love it. So let's talk about, you know, your time as queen. What was your biggest accomplishment and your favorite part?
Stay tuned for a word from my sponsors.
Hands down, my favorite part was having the honor to represent the student body. And the reason I'm saying this, because, you know, when we started out our conversation, I told you about that 1.98, mm-hmm. you know, but that journey from the 1.98 to my senior year was an example of the students' love and the support of the friends, mm-hmm. the teachers, the student body, everybody, the community, my family, my church, my neighborhood, everybody saying, Deb, you can do this, you can do this, you can do yeah. this, you know. But honestly, at the time, I did not see what they saw in me. I didn't see it, and I couldn't appreciate it until they said, look, this is for you. We want you to take it. We want you to carry it.
Right.
You understand? So the clubs and the organizations and my cheerleading sisters, we're still friends to this day. We talk mm-hmm. every morning, over 46 years later. We talk every morning, but it's family. Okay. Now, with my age group, okay, I've seen a lot of people transition.
Yeah.
My family, my relatives, friends, and et cetera. You know, but the one thing that I can definitely stand by is that when I lose a family member or a friend, you know, the family, the maternal family changes.
Yes.
You have your family, you have your church family, your community family, you got your Aggie family.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? So with me, my family is shifting to Greensboro.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody comes home. So no matter what I do, I've got my family with me.
Yeah.
I've got my family with me, you know, and it's especially in times like what's going on today. We check on each other. Matter of fact, I just got a text from one of the Hall of Famers, mm-hmm. you know, and he said, you know what, it's been a long time, Deb. How you doing? You know? And I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. You know, but that's how connected we were as a body,
mm-hmm.
as a family. So no matter where we go, no matter what we do, we're always gonna come home.
Yes.
We always come home.
Yes. Yeah.
We're coming home with a touch of class 50 years later.
Right. That's so, oh my gosh, that's amazing, Ms. Deborah. Thank you so much for just being willing to share that with us, because a lot of times we don't know our legacy. We honestly don't know our legacy. We have no idea where we come from. And I think now we are learning. We are learning. people now are wanting to know where they come from, where these legacies begin. And so I just really thank you for sharing, you know, that part, that personal part of your journey with us, hopefully so that we can get better understanding of where we come from, why we should be proud of who we are and what we represent, and how we can keep the torch going forward. Like how we can go forward and make sure that it just stays where it needs to be. So I really appreciate you sharing that with us. I really do.
Such a sweetheart, Lakeisha. You know, the one thing that I'm going to add on to what you just said, the one thing that I really encourage, you know, young people to do while they can is take a moment and interview your family, interview mm-hmm. your friends, record it. And so you can pass that reporting on to your next generation.
That's you know? Right.
And take advantage of the John Lewis's in life,
mm-hmm.
you know, and interview them, you know, ask them the most intimate questions.
That's true.
Intimate questions.
Mm-hmm.
And just pass it on and have your own personal library.
That's true. That is so, so cool. That's history. That is history in the making that lives beyond that person who, you know, transitions. But it also just sets the stage for, I feel like, other pieces of history and other things to be created. You know, as I segue into your anthology, like, to me, this project, this anthology, this book was, it's awesome. It's like,
thank you.
Totally awesome. Awesome. Especially for someone, again, who did not attend an HBCU, who doesn't really know their full experience, but, you know, has had a taste of it. So tell us about the inaugural HBCU Queen Anthology entitled The HBCU Experience, the HBCU Royal University Queens Edition. Like, I just love, like, when you say that, Miss Debbie, it's like regal. Like, you, I feel like I'm just proud myself. And I'm not even in the book, but I'm just proud myself. So tell us about that.
Most definitely. You know what I loved about this project, outside of the project being one of the most challenging exercises that I've ever been confronted with, because I didn't realize how much emotion and activities were suppressed
for
40 years. I really didn't, you know, and my son helped me to bring it out of me, you know, because there's some things I just don't talk about, you understand, but I'm so glad that this project came to be and the way that it was set up, because we had, what is it, 10, 12 queens? I don't know the exact number of queens, but we didn't know each other's story. We didn't know each other's story. And I'm so glad we didn't, because the commonality, the thread, the messages were like so off the chain,
mm-hmm.
you know, and everybody had a challenge that they had to go through, be it medically, physically, emotionally, just the difference in the timelines of when the rains occurred. It was so beautifully done and beautifully said, but the common thread with all of the stories was the pride.
Mm-hmm.
Was the pride of their HBCUs. You know, that is something that is hard to explain unless you've experienced it.
Right.
And I'm so grateful that my daughter went to an HBCU. I had three kids, two boys and my daughter, and she was the last one. And I'm like, come on, you can do this. You know, at least one of them go, you know, one. But I'm sorry, two of them went to HBCUs. My daughter went to A&T and my son went to Virginia State.
Mm-hmm.
And my other son went to Rutgers University. You know, But the book was, I'm still humbled over listening to each of the stories, you know? But the one thing, I do want to mention this. There was one a queen that wasn't in the book. She transitioned, you know, but in her transition, I think had there been a circle of queens, you know, she may be standing to this day. You understand?
Yeah.
So having that outlook or that circle, that new circle of communication and being able to talk where someone can understand what you might be going through, I think this new circle or beginning of additions is going to help.
Right. Yeah.
I just don't talk about her, you know, because of how she transitioned. But I think had she had an ear or someone to talk to, you know, she might have been standing to this day.
Yes. And that's something I think that I feel like we don't talk about enough. We don't, you know, deal with enough. And I'm grateful again. That's another platform that I've been blessed to meet someone, and we do a collaborative every month where we talk about, you know, mental health and removing the stigma and the conversations that have to go with that. It's just so, it's such an integral part of who we are, I think, and our culture that we should not be ashamed of. And that we should really embrace and how it helps others. Cause it's so, like, it's such a blessing to get the messages like after Tanisha and I go live that says, you really helped me. Like, what you shared, like, just really, you know, helped me. It made me feel whole. It made, you know, like, we never know how we touch people. In the things that we say and do. So even again, Ms. Debbie, thank you for like even just sharing that with us, because I know that could be difficult, you know, to be able to share. But I just think the life that you've lived and the people you've sown into gives honor to her life. And just the fact that, you know, you were connected to her and she was connected to you, and that the things you do or will do are just all showing honor to her legacy, just her still being a part of you. So thank you again for that. Thank you again. It's an honor, Miss Debbie. Honestly, it is. It's an honor for me. It really is.
You never know. Oh, your words were so powerful. You just don't know what you said to me. Ooh.
Yes, ma'am.
Because her transition it still hurts because the ear, her, you know, I'm not sure she had the ear. Mm-hmm. And I thank you for your skill set. And the seeds that you're planting in so many people's lives, I thank you and continue to, because you just don't know who's listening.
Yes, ma'am.
And you don't know if somebody's on that brink, you know, and brink meaning success or wonder how to bounce back from, you know, just from whatever the situation is, you know, a relationship, an issue, a setback, or being not knowing where the next dollar is going to be, or can I feed my child, or, you know, all those types of things, you know, just being able to talk about it is a blessing.
Yeah.
It's a blessing, you know, so.
Definitely.
I love you, girl. I'm just, oh my gosh, I love you. I know you.
Yes, this is an honor for me.
Yeah. much.
Just reading about you and everything, it was an honor for me. Like, it truly was an honor to get the opportunity, the blessing to be able to talk to you in this space and for us to connect. And it's not be a one-time connection for us. So it's just truly an honor for me because just like I said, the way that we live,
yes, it's
honor to other people who have transitioned on before us. I'm doing things that, you know, I was telling a friend today, I'm in awe of how God has really used me.
Yes.
And my parents, both of my parents have transitioned on.
Oh.
And I'm in a space where I really wish they were here, you know,
they are.
Experience that, and that's true. You're
they
absolutely
are.
Right.
They are. They yeah, are.
Absolutely and, right.
No, trust me, there's so much in you, you know, because you wouldn't be who you are without them planting the seeds that are needed. See, the thing is that everything was planted in from both your mom and dad was placed in you.
Yes, ma'am.
At the time that was placed. Mm-hmm. Now it's coming out in a way. You probably sound more like your mom and dad than you realize. I mean, it's amazing. I know.
Yes.
We're going to go to church in a minute. You know, but in just like the Bible says, you know, in Psalms, I think it's Psalms 91, you've been covered under his wing.
Exactly.
You understand? And when the time was right, that's when it was time for you to give birth.
Right.
Okay, in Galatians 6:9, you know, one will reap if ye shall faint not.
Exactly.
And you're doing it.
Yep. That's
are you serious?
Yes, ma'am. That's one of my
so.
That one, Jeremiah 17:9, Psalm 131:23-24, they're on my whiteboard.
You're good. You're good. And don't forget Ecclesiastes 3:10.
Yes.
Okay, because it's your season.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? It's your season, and you're giving rise to everything that you're doing, and you're doing it beautifully.
Thank you.
You're doing it beautifully. So, I know your mom and dad is right there with you, and they're so proud of what you're doing.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, God is making it happen. You are fine.
Yes.
Yes. Fine.
I thank him. I thank him. And I'm a PK. My dad was a preacher. So yes. Yes. It was instilled. And it don't leave you. You
no,
know,
it won't. It won't
leave you
at no, it won't.
All. Yeah.
No. It
at all.
His harmonies is always gonna be on your heart. And it's
yes.
gonna give you the right song to sing. When it's
right.
time to sing it, okay?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I just love you. This is good. I hope y'all taking notes because Miss Debbie been dropping some gems, and y'all gonna miss out. Y'all gonna miss out. Miss out. Okay. So A&T. That sounds like an amazing experience. But after yourself, you went into the banking industry.
Yes.
So why have you remained in this field for more than 40 years?
Stay tuned to hear about Ms. Deborah's experience with being in the banking industry and why she stayed in it for so long.
You know what? That's interesting that you asked that. I've been in banking ever since I left A&T 42 years ago. And around that time, and we were talking about the civil rights movement and all of that, I had a tendency in the banking industry. I had a tendency of moving into fair lending, equal credit opportunity, the rights type of laws. And I helped to write those laws, not only for the people, but also to ensure that the banks were operating in accordance to how they were supposed to operate.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know if you've heard of Community Reinvestment Acts, those types of laws, making sure that money is going back into all communities. Not,
yeah.
You might have heard about redlining. You
yeah,
know,
I heard about that. Yes.
Well, we wrote laws to eliminate that. Okay. It was even at one point, and you can appreciate this, but when my kids were real small, I was with the Federal Reserve Bank, and we were looking at this film as examiners.
Mm-hmm.
We were looking at this film, and it was called The Color of Money. And what was disturbing was in the class, there weren't but a handful of us that were of color, but there was this couple that was talking during this document, but they were speaking broken language. It could have been my grandparents or your parents mm-hmm. speaking, you know, and I heard nothing but snickers in the room. And I was like, at that particular time, I was contemplating coming home and raising my kids. Mm-hmm. But when I heard the snickers, I said, if I couldn't stay into the banking environment and be the voice of those people that are on the screens, who's going to be there to do that?
Yes, ma'am.
And that's why I stayed. That's why I stayed. And what we experienced, you know, during those times, there weren't too many people of color in the banking industry. This is the early 70s. So we were exposed to, you know, being shot at and bank robberies. And, you know, there was some discrimination, that was going on, you know, but we had to endure because we believed that we had to stand.
Yeah.
You know? And so I still, you know, I'm very much involved with banking today as we speak, you know, making sure that, you know, people understand what they're signing, the documents and things like that in a way that it's clear to understand, making sure that banks are compliant to the laws the way that they're written. But in addition to that, you know, fast forward, looking at banking today, it's changed.
Yes.
So you used to go down the street to go to a branch. Now your bank is in your pocket.
Exactly.
So having to stay ahead of technology and banking as we see it today, is there going to be a disparate impact on the underserved and people that look like you and me? You know, do we have access to technology?
Right.
You know, will we have access to lending and deposits and those types of things? You know, so who better to understand the curve again than people like me, you know, that have been in the industry that could speak the language.
Exactly.
So that's why, you know, that's why I stay in banking, because I love it. You know, I love it, but it's also a service. Because there's a lot of us that are trying to start small business loans or home ownership or invest or those types of things. But if you can't understand the basics in financial literacy, you know, we're going to be hurting ourselves.
Exactly. That's so true. Yeah. And education, knowledge is the basis of growth anyway, especially to those who, as you say, are underserved, who people think don't deserve the same as someone else. It's champions like you who are like, no, this will not happen. This will not happen. I'm going to do my little piece. And it may seem like a little piece to you, but it is something huge, because just think of the number of people that your work has impacted, has helped them be able to get fair lending, you know, make sure that someone is going over stuff. Like, I know people get upset when they're like, the banker says, well, I have to read this. And they're like, oh gosh, no, it's a
fine print. It's the fine print, you know, and it's really, you know, it's banking in today's banking environment. It's interesting. Like I said, it's so interesting because the laws, when the laws were written, when we're talking about the 70s and the 80s, you know, depending on where the branches were located, okay, that's where federal funding was going to make sure that the money was going back. But the banks aren't located in the same place anymore. They're all over the place, you know? So, I mean, it's a very complex model, but there's some strong, you know, young people coming up in the banking industry. Not only young, but everybody that understands the language, you know, being able to communicate it so folks can understand. Even those that don't understand, making sure that they have access to the technology that can get them the information
that they need. So
that is very important. Yes. That is very important. You know, so it's real. You know, it's international. It's not just the United States. It's international.
Yeah.
You know? So you have to understand what governs and who governs the flow of income.
Right.
Yeah. So that's why I stay in the banking industry.
That's so awesome. And I certainly, you know, appreciate the fact that, you know, like you said, it was a service, you know, service to, you know, help others. I just love that. I love that. So North Carolina, Miss Queen, all of that. How has your experience, you know, being in North Carolina, you know, and being, you know, this beautiful queen that you still are, definitely. How has that helped you be who you are today?
I learned so many things from being a queen, such as tenacity, humility, my work ethic, the service of giving back, you know, obviously never giving up from that GPA. I always go back at the GPA, you know, because the beginning doesn't always justify the ends, okay? But always having that second chance to change your direction if that's what you want to change, you know? Proficiency, the accountability, you know, those types of things allow me to stand and work on my oratorical skills, because it's not just about me. It's about we. You know, when I was at A&T, again, it wasn't me, it was we. It was we, the student body. It was me, the students, the administration, the bands, the cheerleaders, the da-da-da. It was all of that in one, you know? So as I go forward, and I work in different groups, and I'm also a missionary at my church, you know, so my involvement in my church, I guess you could tell, you know, I know we're on this thing having church, but but my, I have a passion, I've always had a passion of giving back and service. I sit on different boards for organizations and on a personal level, you know, my platforms have exposed me to numerous diverse audiences, you know, like the most powerful men and women in business, political figures, celebrities. I've even worked with the Pope, you know, the United Nations ambassadors and et cetera, you know, but who would have thought? Who would have thought that I'm also an advisor for a queen in Africa? You know, I mean, sometimes my kids don't even believe me until I actually get them on the, like, look, you know, here's Her Royal Highness, you know? You know? And they're like, Mom, are you serious? I'm like, yeah, you know, but.
He's right here.
They laugh, you know, but and the thing that's so funny, you know, they asked me, well, how did you meet her, you know? And it was just, it was so interesting because she tracked me down and I was tracking her down because of our love for giving back, doing things, you know, and so now I'm helping her, you know, with her country and building programs,
right?
You know, also with Education Africa, that's another organization that we bring kids, well, before the COVID piece, but we married kids from organizations that were poverty, you know, were poverty nations, you know, they weren't as blessed, you know, but we combined the kids that had wealth with those that didn't, and we made teams and we brought them over to the United States to compete at the United Nations, you know, and in doing that, I mean, these kids got to fly for the first time, represent their countries for the first time. And, you know, just, and what did they give me? I had the honor of being in jail for a couple of days in Africa, but it was such an experience because I was honored with being placed in Nelson Mandela's jail and sat there for 3 days, you know. And in that experience, I had a true appreciation of the sweat and tears because I was actually feeling the walls where
he was. Yeah.
And it's experiences such as that led me to start this passion that I have, and that's to collect dirt from the beaches around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll end with this because I don't know how much you want me to say, you know, but when I went to go work with Her Royal Highness, there was this young man that asked me, he said, Miss Debbie, you know, in his broken language, Miss Debbie, what did it feel like to be in Uganda? How's it feel like to be in Uganda? And I looked at him and I told him, I said, what I'm about to say is my story. It's not yours. Mm-hmm. It's not yours, you know? And I told him, I said, when I go to different countries from around the world, I collect dirt.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, how would you feel if somebody told you to go home and you didn't know your address? I said, see, the dirt that I pick up from here is the dirt that I pick up. But when you pick up the same dirt, this is your dirt, is your home. I'm still seeking mine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know my lineage. Mm-hmm. I don't know my lineage. You know, so learning cultures, learning giving back, learning the ways to articulate and to represent, because at the time I was representing the United States in Uganda, you know, sitting down with the kings and queens of the world, you know, yes, I had a flashback to being Miss A&T. It's like, okay, you know, but I was humbled.
Right.
Because I was humbled because the training that I received at A&T, I could take it anywhere in the globe and I could still apply the fundamentals of what I taught at an HBCU.
Yes.
So the importance of legacy, it really goes deep.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. It has been like such a blessing, like just talking to you, being in your space, like it is such an honor. You're doing like so many great things to bless just not just the youth, but everybody. Like every part of you is about serving someone else. And I think that is what life is about. It is not about us wanting to have these platforms and be leaders. Even Jesus served.
That's he it. Served.
And that's just what it is. It's about serving others. My podcast is not for me to be on someone's big platform or stage or whatever. It's about me connecting people together. Yeah. Someone who may need what you have, Ms. Debbie, was blessed tonight by what you shared. And that's my only purpose, is to be able to connect people together, because we don't know, especially now in this day and age where we got to sit still and folks don't know what to do with themselves. Yes, you know what to do. It's time for you to get your house in order.
But you know what? You know what? And the blessing in sitting still is to have that discerning ear.
Exactly.
It's also an opportunity to prune those things that you don't need.
Yes.
So you really, that, you know, it's a matter of really focusing on what you really, what God has placed in your spirit.
Yes.
Understand? And sitting still long enough so it could be molded in a format that could allow you to get on the bike mm-hmm. on his perpetual bike.
Yep.
And pedal. But see, the key point of getting on that bike is that you can't be in the front seat. He's the one that's got to be in the front seat, and you've got to be in the back. That's and right. when you get all nervous and you just don't know what to do, you know, you just lean back. He just leans back and just says, hold on, I got you. I got you. But yeah. you got to trust me. And all the people that cross your path, all the people just pass everything off. Just pass it off, you know, because I'm going to give you the things that you need to get you through. Yeah. An important thing that I want you to do is to keep pedaling. Exactly. Just to keep pedaling. And that's what I want you to do with your podcast. You keep pedaling because there's something, somebody that you're going to touch. I'm sure you've touched so many people. So many people. I'm just sitting here so... I'm so happy for you. I just don't know what to do. And I'm just so honored and blessed to have this time with you because you're so easy to speak to.
Yes, ma'am.
Approachable. And I love you for that.
Yes.
I love you for that. And the moments that you've given me,
it's an honor for me.
No, it's me. You're such a sweetheart.
Certainly have enjoyed this. Thank you so much, Ms. Debbie. So tell the listeners how they can get connected with you.
I'm on Facebook.
Okay.
But I'm on Facebook, but I'm, you know, I'm not the biggest social media person. You know? my email address, I guess. Is that good to give out?
Ma'am, and I'll put it in the show notes. So if anyone has any questions or anything, they can definitely reach out to you.
Yeah. Oh, and you know, I did forget to mention, I am a Delta Sigma Theta.
Okay.
Oh, yes. I must mention that. Yeah. Yes. The Rancocas Valley Alumni Chapter in New Jersey. I must mention that because that's what we do. It's about service.
Yes.
You know? And it's nothing like it. It's nothing like it. You know, giving back and serving, that's our name.
Exactly. Love it. Thank you so much for being like an humbled guest. I have been blessed. By just your presence, what you share with us. And this will not be our last conversation. I'm telling you, we are going to talk again. We're going to get you back on the podcast again and any other
forward to it.
You are always, always welcome to be a part of.
I'm speechless and that's hard to do. That's hard to do. You know, I heard about you, but oh my gosh, you're so remarkable.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, and I want you to be safe.
I will.
Thank you for tuning in to The Convo. I hope you enjoyed the show. Be sure to subscribe on Anchor or Apple Podcasts.